Okay, we'll get started. Good morning, everyone. This is Gerardo Bruzzi, Chairman of the Ventura County Chapter of the Aerospace & Defense Forum and Managing Director of BrainSpire Consulting. This morning's topic is on the ongoing revolution in space commercialization and democratization. It's a great privilege to welcome Dr. Leon Alkali, who will be discussing the future of space-based businesses and his presentation titled From Space Science to the Emerging Space Economy, A Personal Journey. Ivan, I guess you can go to the next slide. Thank you very much. The purpose of the Aerospace and Defense Forum is to enable people in the industry to share information, ideas, collaborate on projects, and develop businesses and support each other. There are 9 chapters that normally meet monthly in person. And to continue fulfilling our purpose, we are currently conducting about 3 webinars per month until in-person meetings can be resumed. There's also a monthly newsletter, over 250 recordings of chapter presentations like this one, and eventually tours of aerospace and defense facilities, which will be pretty cool. More can be found on the website, aerospaceanddefenseforum.org. Next slide, please. Thank you. The Ventura chapter is the newest chapter in the forum, established just this last May in 2021. Ventura County, like much of Southern California, is home to a growing number of aerospace companies, some of them listed here in the slide. I also want to take this opportunity to present the new members of the Ventura County Chapter Steering Committee, Michael Sponsillo, Senior Project Manager at Park & Hannifin, Robert Gleason, Senior Director of Engineering, Aircraft Group at MOG, David Conrad, Director of Business Development at PTI Technologies, Brian Barker, CEO of Hummingbird Aero LLC. Please give a big hand to our new friends. Before we get started, next slide, please. Just a bit of logistics. Everybody should be on mute and your camera should be off unless you want to show yourself. All the questions will be handled through the chat, which is the bottom left to the share screen on your Zoom window. Recordings of the webinar will be posted in the AND Forum website for download by AND Forum members. All attendees will receive an email when the recordings are available, and you will also receive a list of all the contact information for all the attendees for those who grant the permission to do so. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, introducing our presenter. So, tremendous progress in small satellites and reusable rockets has lowered the cost of access to space by about 20 times since the space shuttle era. This is opening low Earth orbit to an ever-increasing number of companies seeking profits in the high frontier. Dr. Leon Alkali's unique combination of scientific and managerial expertise makes him especially well-equipped to discuss the new space economy. He will talk about his personal journey from the scientific exploration of the solar system to the creation of an economic ecosystem in low Earth orbit. Dr. Leon Alkali joined NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in 1989 after receiving his PhD in computer science from UCLA. His 32-year career at JPL included technology development in a range of areas, including microavionics, miniaturized spacecraft systems, systems on a chip, small satellites, robotic planetary missions, mission formulations, strategic planning, and strategic partnerships. Leon Alkali was the JPL capture lead for the GRAIL mission to the moon, which launched in 2011, and the capture lead for the InSight mission to Mars, which landed on the planet in 2018. For his contributions to both missions, Leon received NASA's Distinguished Individual Achievement Medals, as well as a Group Achievement Awards. Before retiring from JPL in early 2021, Leon led the development of JPL's Strategic Implementation Plan and oversaw JPL's domestic and international strategic partnerships. Since retiring from JPL, Leon founded the Pasadena-based Mandala Space Ventures Incubator, focused on launching new businesses in space and commercialization and commercializing space technologies. Leon is also a general partner in the Explorer One Venture Fund, and Mandala Space Ventures affiliate venture fund, which you can say is pretty impressive. One thing you can certainly learn from Dr. Alkali's illustrious career and novel plans for the future is to dare mighty things. And with that, everybody, Dr. Leon Alkali. Next slide. So
Gerardo, this is Leon. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
I turned on my microphone, but the video, you have to allow me to turn that on if you want me to turn on my video or not.
Okay, let's see.
Very good. Can you, very good. So let's thank you, Gerardo, and thank you, Ivan, for the wonderful introduction and opportunity. And Ivan, if you can go to the next slide, that would be great. Wonderful. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm really excited, delighted to be part of this program. Again, thank you, Ivan and Gerardo, for inviting me to give this presentation today. I'm really excited to share with you my experience from space science to space entrepreneurship and a personal perspective, as you'll see during this next 40 minutes. Next slide, please. So this is a picture, a beautiful picture of JPL. I like to refer to this JPL as my home away from home. I spent 32 years here, enjoyed every day coming to work and being part of this this fantastic organization and the wonderful people who work here and who have really done a tremendous service to the nation and to the world. I remember in 1989 when I first interviewed at JPL, I'll give a shout out to my close friends, Rob Manning, who today is the chief engineer at JPL, and Bob Rasmussen. They were the two people, amongst others, who interviewed me in 1989 and hired me. And I stayed there for 32 years and since until I retired six months ago. Next slide, please. I'd like to just kind of go back in time to 1936. And these are the original founders, really, of JPL. They are referred to in many ways as the Suicide Squad. If you look at the history of JPL, you'll see names like Frank Molina and Jack Parsons and Ed Foreman and others who were students of Von Karman. And they were conducting experiments at that time with new propulsion technologies. And they were also referred to as the bad boys of Caltech, students of Von Karman who were kind of creating a lot of mess on campus, and they were expelled, banished from campus to as the Suicide Squad to go and do their experiments way out into the foothills of the Sierras. And really that's where JPL is today. We like to refer to them as the entrepreneurs, the early first entrepreneurs at that time in 1936, who really founded upon whose work and Von Karman's work JPL was founded. A lot of interesting books, a lot of interesting stories on this topic. This was a very eclectic, disruptive group. These were the founders at the time of a new laboratory, a new generation of entrepreneurs that created JPL at the time. So I want to give a tribute to them. Next slide, please. I'd like to tell you a little bit about space science, really not more than just 2 or 3 minutes about space science. Space science is a wonderful topic. It's really a differentiator between what NASA and JPL, for example, do and other NASA centers compared to the billionaire club of SpaceX and Blue Origins and Virgin and so on. And there's really one or two words that differentiate what they do versus what we do, because we often had questions, you know, how does our work compare to what Elon Musk is doing or others? And there's a very simple answer, and that is space science. We are in the business, or NASA is in the business, and JPL, of space science. That's really the motivation to do the work that we do. And if I were to pick one word, only one word, to describe the overall theme behind all aspects of the space science, it would be the word life. Simply life. Exploring the origins of life on Earth and beyond Earth. You see a picture here of Enceladus taken by Cassini, and this is a moon of Saturn that we found these huge geysers spewing out water, pure water coming out of the moon Enceladus. There were indications of such geysers in the past by pictures from Hubble, but seeing this, these pictures, these images from Cassini was just breathtaking. I remember the first time I saw these pictures coming out, just as pure water going into the atmosphere such as it is around Enceladus. If you go to the next slide, please, Ivan. Cassini actually flew through these geysers and sampled the water and the hydrogen coming out of these thermal openings on the surface of Enceladus. And to connect the dots here, some of the prevailing theory today of how life originated on Earth finds the origins of life to have started at the bottom of the ocean and at the interface of thermal vents deep in the bottom of the ocean, coming out of Earth, the crust, in that interface between the bottom of the ocean and the actual ocean, that these were the first hatcheries, the first incubators, if you want, of early life that originated on Earth. And Cassini found that the hydrogen sampled around Enceladus had very similar properties as the hydrogen that is found at the bottom of the oceans at the thermal vents. In other words, there's indication from Cassini that the thermal vents on Enceladus are actually creating this water plume coming out of Enceladus that have similar properties as the thermal vents on Earth. So connecting the dots between potential life as it originated on Earth possibly have originated also or may originate on Enceladus is a huge discovery for space science. Next slide. The other overarching theme still on the topic of life is there another Earth, an Earth 2.0 out there? We know from Kepler, the space telescope, that there are thousands and thousands of planets around other stars. A few decades ago, it was just a theory. It was not clear whether there are one or many. Now we know there's thousands and thousands of planets around other stars in our galaxy. But we've also found that there are a good number of these planets that are in the Goldilocks zone. That means a planet that is at the similar distance from the sun as our, as Earth is, of a similar size, and that has an atmosphere as well. There are Earth 2.0s out there. And that does beg the question, how are we going to go there? Will we go there? And will we explore? Will we one day inhabit and live on another Earth 2.0 in another solar system in our galaxy? How do we get there? How do we image these areas? Even today with missions like TESS and other telescopes, we're able to image the weather conditions in a seasonal variation on some of these exoplanets. These are planets around other stars in our galaxy. It's phenomenal science, and these are all topics that connect the NASA kind of theme of space science, very different from the business of space. Next slide, please. I wanted to show a little bit here how we go from space science to our missions. Only two examples here, very quickly, Perseverance rover on Mars today doing phenomenal work. I want to draw your attention to one instrument here that maybe didn't get enough attention, MOXIE. MOXIE is the first ever demonstration of creating oxygen on another planetary body from the atmosphere of Mars. So MOXIE is a first-time demonstration. All these instruments are amazing. But generating oxygen for human consumption on another planetary body is another revolution in our missions and so on. Next slide. Another mission to bring to your attention, this will launch in about 2 years, Psyche, is actually a mission to an iron core asteroid. This is a planetesimal that has been stripped of its mantle and crust, and all that remains is an iron core. NASA has a science mission to orbit and inspect and image this iron core. This is also a possible future opportunity for commercial missions to maybe mine and bring asteroids back to the Earth-Moon system for exploitation. But also, this mission also has a technology demonstration on it. It's going to demonstrate for the first time optical communication from the distance of the asteroid belt back to Earth. Next slide, please. The Mars helicopter, we can go to the next slide, Ivan, given the time. I refer to this as the Kitty Hawk moment on Mars. This is an image from the helicopter. Next slide, please. The first ever demonstration of mobility on another planetary body done earlier this year. Shout out to Mimi Ong and Bob Ballaram and their team on the Mars Ingenuity helicopter. Phenomenal work. This is a slightly over 1 kilogram helicopter. It actually has a commercial Qualcomm chip in there, Snapdragon, to do the onboard processing and navigation. It is a breakthrough in technology demonstration as part of space science. Next slide. Moving along, I wanted to show another technology, and this is a partnership. This is a DARPA-funded work at NASA JPL with MIT, Caltech, and Kari from Korea, where if you hit the next slide, you will see a short video animation. We actually took the Boston Dynamics rover, transplanted a brain called the Nebula Brain on the robotic system from Boston Dynamics, and the team designed a swarm, a group of robots that can, without GPS, navigate and explore tunnels, underground systems, and so on. And this, they won the DARPA competition 2 years ago, and the team is called COSTAR. You can look at them up. But the main point, if you hit the next slide, Ivan, is that all of these technologies are ready for commercialization and are applicable to the commercial world. Examples are a vertical takeoff, urban mobility systems, and so on. They need to have reliability built in. They need to have autonomy built in. And there are a lot of technologies in the U.S. government that are applicable to these applications. Next slide. So I thought I'd start the next chapter here with who are the founders of today. Compared to the Suicide Squad of 1936, I think we've come a long way. The notion of a founder has been democratized. It is much more diverse than it was then. So you see here, both in the middle, you see NASA, a young, diverse group of entrepreneurs. On the left, you see academia. On the right, you see some of the SpaceX's and Blue Origins and Planet. In my opinion, there's now a secondary and tertiary kind of effect. It used to be that founders came from big organizations. Space was the domain of sovereign nations. And now we're seeing the secondary and tertiary evolution of founders coming out of SpaceX and Blue Origins and academia, going straight into entrepreneurship. Maybe they worked a couple of years or 5 years at JPL, Ames, or other NASA centers, or the Air Force, and they're launching their own business. It is beautiful. It is very special, and it is open to everybody of all backgrounds and all different educations and diversity and so on. Next slide. So where do they come from? I already covered this, space agencies, private sector, we see people coming out of SpaceX Blue Origins and creating the Relativity Space and the other companies that are doing really great stuff, and I'll talk more about that next. Next slide, Ivan. So where do they go? Where do these founders go? Well, they go straight to venture capital firms that are well established in this business, many in Silicon Valley and in Boston and in Austin and many other places. But they also, these companies that are called accelerators, incubators, and studios. I personally looked at that for quite some time, studied the business model of each type of incubator. Clearly, Y Combinator is one of the pioneers and the best known accelerator, I believe, in the world. But I've listed here a number of other ones that are active in space, in AI, in robotics, Techstars, Boost VC, Creative Destruction Lab. There's a list of certainly another 30, 40 companies that I can list here. And we've started Mandala Space Ventures as a low throughput at this point studio. Next slide. Where the purpose of Mandala Space Ventures, which is only recently formed, is really to support and work with founders in the space business to create their own new ventures. Next slide. So just a few words about Mandala. Mandala Space Ventures is a platform for founders to create new companies, to onboard Mandala as a platform. It has three elements, a studio, it has its portfolio companies, and a venture fund. Next slide. We are building a facility right now in Pasadena, and this is an artistic rendering of that view. I wanted to just stay a few seconds here and say that I still believe, even in this post-COVID era, hopefully soon, that a location is still important. I think times have changed significantly, and having a flexible work environment is the norm. People want to work from home or work from wherever they want to be. And I believe that that's going to be the new future, is the flexible work environment. But I'm also perhaps old school. I believe in the chemistry between people, the need. We are social beings, and we need to be together. We need to work together, build teams together, create new ventures, and inspire each other. And there's just so much you can do over video. So I believe in the mixture of both, having a place where things can come together, but also supporting a flexible work environment so that everybody can maximize their own happiness, their own work life balance. So I believe in the combination of the two. Next slide. So a little bit about the Explorer One Fund, and we'll go deeper into that. This fund that we've created, it's a small fund, $20 million fund, still under development. But it is the fund to support the new entrepreneurs coming into Mandala, but also new entrepreneurs that are not necessarily in the Mandala platform or studio. So it's both a balance between investing in the internal companies, but also completely unrelated to Mandala into outside companies. Next slide. In the venture fund, we've divided our kind of attention and our focus on the following verticals that I'll just go through very briefly, which I think will be interesting to this audience, because a lot of these things only a few years ago were really not the focus as it is today. So much has happened in this field, next slide, that it's worth just going through. I'll start with one sector in the data-centric space economy. We've started a company called Continuum Space Systems, which I'll say a few words about. But I also want to give recognition to others out there. This is just a sample: Kubo's, Slingshot, Epsilon 3. Those are some of the companies that are very exciting. They're doing fabulous work, and personally, I'm excited to collaborate with them in this business. Next slide. Continuum Space Systems is our first launch from Mandala Space Ventures. It is a company which is a space as a service, mission design as a service. It is a platform to allow entrepreneurs to enter into the space system in a very rapid, easy way, using a platform that is a proprietary platform where we're licensing tools from NASA, from other sources, and allowing, using software as a service, entrepreneurs to enter the space business in a rapid fashion. It is also applicable to existing companies with constellations in space. If you hit the next slide, please. The platform is designed to be location agnostic. You can design your constellation at Earth, at the Moon, at Mars, asteroid belt. It is a unified flat platform for space in our solar system. So whether you're doing landers or constellations on the Moon or constellations on Earth, this is a single platform that allows you to onboard, design your mission, do mission design, trajectory analysis, operations, and more. Next slide. I'm switching now to the next vertical. I refer to it as a supply chain. There are exciting new opportunities in this business. We're very excited to see Ursa Major Technologies, a propulsion a company that is growing very fast. Adranos is another company that is a solid rocket motor advanced technology company from Purdue. Reaction Dynamics is a hybrid engine technology from Canada. Axion Systems is a advanced and new electric spray propulsion technology out of MIT. Archimea is a established company from Spain that opened up a U.S. Branch here in Los Angeles. Our incubator is also working with them as one of our affiliates, working closely with Maddie Carrington, with Archimea, that does technologies like mechanical systems and digital analog electronics as well. Moving to the next slide, another vertical that is super exciting is habitats in space. This is a huge emerging field, perhaps the biggest emerging field right now. Axiom Space is clearly in the front of this group right now. But also Bigelow, Think Orbital, these are companies, and I haven't put here as well, Blue Origins, is certainly a future player in this field. And today, NASA is receiving proposals, likely from each one of them, for a tender for the next generation of commercial habitats in lower Earth orbit. Next slide. Another area that we're very interested in paying attention to is the new emerging launch vehicle business and transportation business. I've listed here Stoke and ABL as companies we're keeping close track of, but also we're excited about the Radiant Aerospace. This is a perhaps the first that we've seen of a horizontal takeoff vehicle that can go from ground to low Earth orbit and come back in a single vehicle using horizontal takeoff. Next slide. Another sector that we're paying attention to is space manufacturing, in-space manufacturing. Companies like Space Tango, Varga, Space Forge, and others. I have to say that just a few years ago, I did not think that this was ready for a commercialization, but I believe now it is. And companies listed here are doing excellent work in this business. Space Forge from the UK, Varda is here local in California, and Space Tango as well. Next slide. Another area to pay attention to that we're actively engaged in is space infrastructure. There are a number of companies we're paying attention to, Analytical Space, Skyloom, Nebula Compute. These are companies that are putting broadband into space using optical communication, memory servers, data centers in space. There's an emerging space economy, including blockchain in space, and a lot more that is going to need infrastructure in space. And so I believe this is a very large emerging sector in the space economy. Next, please. And space tourism, I consider this low-hanging fruit. This is today. We have Virgin Galactic already, Blue Origin already doing this, and we're paying attention to Space Perspective, a company that is doing high-altitude balloons. You can argue whether they're a space company or not, because they're certainly within the atmosphere, but they are providing a perspective, as the name implies, a view of space. But it is part of the space tourism that I think is going to take off in a huge way in the immediate future. Next slide. Let me wrap this all in just saying that, you know, asking the rhetorical question, where is all this going? Where are we as a society going with all these entrepreneurial activities, all the money, all the investments, the VCs and the SPACs and so on? If I look at a big picture, my answer would be we're heading towards an interplanetary society. That is huge. That is big. That is Moon, Mars, asteroids, and beyond. But I also want to send out a cautionary note that it's not like we performed as a society in a stellar way on Earth in terms of how we treat each other, how we treat our planet. So we need to learn and do better as we grow as an interplanetary society and learn how to build a more just society and be able to take care of not only our planet, but other planets as we expand and as we go and become an interplanetary society. So a lot of things to learn here, a lot of things to do better than we're doing right now on Earth. Next slide. So to wrap this up, I'll give you just a few minutes of my own personal journey through space and time. And I start with a tribute to the Apollo 11 astronauts. I know most people will agree that this was an inspirational time, an inspirational moment. Whoever lived during those times and can remember, this was inspiring to the whole world. If you go to the next slide, Ivan, I wanted to share with you as a personal gesture here. I recently found, as I was cleaning up my home, and I found these Polaroid pictures, and I remember that in 1969 in Belgrade, today Serbia, back then Yugoslavia, I actually met the three astronauts in person. The bottom right picture is me when I was 10 years old with my dad. That's the car that the Apollo astronauts were driven in. And they came, they were on a world tour. They visited Marshall, President Tito at the time. And my dad was actually one of the organizing people of that visit. And he wasn't one of the officials. He wasn't that high up. But he just one day put us family in the car and said, we're going to meet the astronauts at the vineyards outside of Belgrade. And with a sheer chutzpah that he had, he actually, without any credentials, he actually made it with the family all the way in there. And we took these Polaroid pictures. You can see on the top right, you see Michael Collins kneeling, and then you see to the right of him standing Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong. You see Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin in the picture on the left. And then only in 2019, I was at the IAC meeting in Washington, D.C., and I approached Buzz here on the right. I took a picture with him 50 years later, and I asked him if he remembered this event in Belgrade, and he did. Obviously, he didn't remember me for sure, but he remembered the meeting with Tito, and he mentioned that Tito took them bear hunting. And that they had a great time in Belgrade at that time. Next slide. So my journey into space or through space took me through a few steps. My first readings that brought me into space, imagining space and imagining science and science discoveries was I contribute to Jules Verne. If any of you have kids or as kids have read some of those books. They're very, very inspirational for a young, young kid to read. It really opens up the mind, and that's what it did for me. Next slide. Next, I give credit to Isaac Asimov. He was my hero. I read everything possibly that Isaac Asimov wrote, that was not only science fiction, iRobot, and the trilogy, and but he was a phenomenal writer of popular science. So I remember reading, I must have been maybe 16 years old, his book called Inside the Atom. And he was at the time popularizing the inner workings, the inner composition of the atom, quarks and all, and everything that was going on in, he was able to bring that down to a level of a teenager understanding what's going on in the field of science. Next slide. Next, I give credit to Arthur C. Clarke. I remember where I was when I finished reading the Odyssey 2001, Space Odyssey 2001. I remember reading the book multiple times, trying to figure out what the hell happens at the end of the book. And again, that raised a level of curiosity and intellect, I would say, that I was learning from creators in the field of science fiction, science, and so on. Next. I kind of conclude with another icon, or icons, I would say, in this field, Albert Einstein. But I in particular want to bring out something that is not known very well, and that is that his first wife, Mileva Maric from Serbia, was a brilliant physicist and a brilliant mathematician. They met in school, in college, and it was well known that Albert Einstein was more the abstract thinker, and that Mileva was more the pragmatic, down-to-earth mathematician. And she did a lot of the work in terms of proofreading, in terms of helping, in terms of contributing to the work of Albert Einstein. She is not often credited enough. And like many women scientists at that time and throughout the 40s and 50s and later, they did not get their due credit in history. So I thought I'd use this opportunity to give credit to Mileva Maric as well as Albert Einstein. Next slide. Finally, to just conclude with Mandala being open for business for tomorrow's and today's space innovators. Next slide. I will just end with this GIF. If you look at what a mandala is an ancient form, a graphical form of representation of the cosmos and humanity's role or position in the cosmos. Mandalas have been drawn in graphical form by Johannes Kepler. Also, if you just look at this, this represents Earth and Venus orbiting the sun. And if you plot the line between Earth and Venus as they orbit the sun, you actually form a mandala in space. So I thought the word choice of mandala is appropriate for inspiring the next generation of founders. Next slide. So with that, I want to thank you. Next slide. This is, if you need to follow up, you can contact me on these this email and locations. I also want to take just a few seconds to thank my team, especially Chris Ochoa and Chandra Clemens for helping me put this presentation together. My Explorer One team, Phil Scully, Daniel Wallman, Daniel Kleinman, the Continuum Space team with Loic Shabazz and other team members. So, Gerardo and Ivan, back to you. I think I stayed on time. So thank you all very much for your attention. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much, Leon. This was an amazing presentation. And Maybe we could start typing in the questions on the chat box on the bottom of your screen. Maybe I can start with a few questions that we have prepared. The first question that I think comes to mind is, of all these new technologies that are coming to the market, I guess, which one do you think holds the most promise from a business point of view?
Oh, well, that's an unfair question, right? I mean, I think if I were to recommend to anybody anything, and I'm not in that business of making recommendations, but having a diverse portfolio is the best approach. All of these sectors, as you can tell, have their kind of a place in the space economy. I like to think in terms of infrastructure. We're building elements upon which other elements are built. So infrastructure is important for building other applications. But I think there's a lot of connectivity. When you look at space manufacturing, they need to bring the results of manufacturing back to Earth. So they will need something like a soft landing, like a Radiant Aerospace, to go and collect products from space and bring them back down. All the applications, the imaging applications, the planets of the world and Spire and so on, they will need broadband communication, which is what Skyloom and analytical space are doing. But they will also need data centers and compute centers, what Nebula is doing. So I think there's a lot of connectivity here between all of these verticals.
Very good. Let me just see. Next question is, so from this point of view, what do you think are some of the, I guess, say, down-to-earth impacts of this new space economy ecosystem? You mentioned data centers and broadband. I understand that the ground segment in all of this is very important. How do you think this is going to have an impact on the average people's day-to-day life?
A very good question. And I believe it will have a positive impact on the life on Earth in the following sense. The vantage point of observing Earth from space clearly has direct benefits to how we take care of our planet, how we do carbon footprint monitoring, how we take care of the planet from a climate change, climate monitoring point of view. This is a huge benefit to society. And then there are other applications in agriculture, in transportation, in just day-to-day life, including communications and business. So the impact in a positive way on society is huge. And I believe it can lead and should lead to a better and more just society. I would recommend reading a book by Freeman Dyson. I don't remember the exact title, but it's something like The Internet and the Sun, or Solar Energy, the Internet, where Freeman Dyson, whom I knew very well, the late Freeman Dyson, and a huge figure in space science and in fundamental physics, actually looked at the future of technologies like energy, internet, and AI. And I think those are areas that will benefit society and generating a more equitable society.
Very good, very good. And kind of on the same topic, what are some of your investment criteria for selecting businesses to invest in?
So we have a team that is looking at investments, and we do a lot of due diligence, and we do thought into it. Our thesis is to invest in founders and emerging companies that are fundamental to the growth of the future space economy. So we invest in early stage, that's seed and series A. So we want to be in that early stage of investment into companies, not in the latter stages. We can really contribute. And then we want to invest in companies that where we can add value. where we as a team, as a group, can really get involved and be and add value to these companies and investments. There is a question here that popped up, which frankly I want to bring it up because I don't have a good answer to it. I don't want to shy away. There's a question about legal issues in space and how are conflicts to be resolved and so on, which is a fair and a good question. I do know that there's a huge field and there are conferences and symposiums on this topic of space law. I know a lot of the people in this business of space law where ownership, jurisdiction is the key topic of discussion. So there is a whole field of space law, how are conflicts resolved. I know that the Artemis Accord from NASA addresses a basically what are called basic principles of collaboration in space. And it addresses topics such as if China and let's say the US or Russia are on the moon and there's an emergency aspect to any one of them, that the others are bound by some, let's say, honor agreement to be of help and assistance to each other. So there are steps made in that fashion to avoid conflicts, to resolve conflicts. I would look at the Artemis Accord. You can look at the NASA website and look up space law.
Very good. Just something else coming up on the chat. I'm not going to take that question about China.
Sure. It's a fair question, and this comes up many times. You know, what is my view on China's aggressive posture in space? There is no doubt about it that that there is a challenge here, a problem here that is. And my position is that you know, as a U.S. citizen and in the U.S. we are all bound by, you know, U.S. law and the policy of the State Department. So we don't have any direct contacts with any Chinese organization in space. But I think the future is that these topics have to be addressed and resolved. I believe in a humanitarian approach to business, but I do agree that China and not only China. Have an aggressive posture, and we would be, I would say, irresponsible not to take that into account.
Okay. Well, I have another question, kind of going back to the business part of things. We've heard a lot about different financing options. Obviously, a venture fund is one, but we've also seen a number of companies using special purpose acquisition companies to go public and raise funds that way. Some people say that this is perhaps a bit of a bubble. What do you think is the, you know, is this actually providing capital to companies who are, that are viable? Or are we seeing kind of, a little bit of irrational exuberance, in this market to get financing for these companies?
You know, I like to be honest in terms of what my expertise is, and it's not in the area of SPACs. I'm more of an observer. This would be more of a question for my partner in the venture fund, Phil Scully. But I do think there seems to be I would say a growth spur, but also lessons learned in this world of fast growth and SPACs. Cases of momentous space come to mind and others. But I think SPACs have been around for a while. They are an established model of access to public markets and public funding. I think it's a great thing that the Securities and Exchange Commission and the government are regulating this field as well. So I think it's a valid exit strategy for many companies and fast-growing companies. It's certainly an exit strategy. I personally am not an expert in that field.
Okay. Well, I guess, let me just see. There's another question in here. You only invest in space.
I can answer this question that just came up. Do I only invest in space companies? So the answer is, our thesis is to invest in the incubator to launch businesses that are either directly in space business, kind of in, off planet, but also in commercializing space technologies. So we are looking at a number of opportunities. One of them we are looking at into is a company called Hydroplane, which is a liquid hydrogen based fuel cell for aerial mobility, which has applications to space, whether it's on the moon or a space station. So that would be more commercializing technologies, not immediately in space, but on Earth, but with direct applications to space. So the answer is we do both.
Okay. And I just noticed we're coming up on time. So last question, unless there's anything else, last question is for my question is, what would you like to see happen in this space ecosystem over the next, let's say, decade? You know, today we are with the space station now almost 20, more than 20 years old. What do you think is this space economy is going to look like in the next 10 years? What would you like to see happen in the next 10 years?
Yeah, I would like to first answer a question that came up. Yes, feel free to contact me through email if you would like to. And also if there are any questions about the fund, feel free to contact us, Daniel Kleinman and myself and others. But I think the we're in a fast growing period of the space economy. I mean, it is now, I believe, on an exponential growth path. It is the beginning, but it is a fast growing. I expect in the next 10 to 20 years that we will see a lot of infrastructure in space. We will see commercial real estate in space, hotels, laboratories, manufacturing in space. I think we'll see tourism take off in a big way. We'll have a fierce competition in the launch vehicle business. We will have I think a broad base of entrepreneurs and founders coming into the space business in a big way. Only in a few years from now, we'll have a new group of astronauts on the surface of the moon. The business of space is going to be global. There'll be entrepreneurs coming out of Singapore and the UK and Australia, New Zealand, the United States, Argentina, many, many other places, India. So it is a global business and entrepreneurs are going to come from all over the world.
Excellent. So many exciting things. Well, thank you very much, Leon, and thank you everybody for your questions and for being here today. We're going to start to wrap this up.
Gerardo, can you bring up one page back just the emails and the contact information so everybody can see that? Is that either? Yeah. Just so that people can see that. So there's my email for the Explore One Fund or the Mandala Space Ventures. And thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much. Okay. Well, thank you very much, everybody. We're just going to start to wrap up. Before we go, just want to make a couple of announcements. Upcoming events. We have a few things coming up on the calendar. So mark your calendars for September 15. We have Kramer Lindell talk about factory floor surface measurements to increase yield and profit. So if you're into manufacturing, this is a good thing to watch. September 16, Doug Shane talk about Ampere, which is an electric airplane company. September 23, Ask the Questions, Larry O'Toole. I'm not sure what that's going to be about, but we'll sure find out. And on September 30, Anita Sengupta, founder of Hydroplane and professor of astronautical engineering, will also talking at the Ventura County chapter. Next slide. Just a reminder, the Aerospace Forum, you can join for free and attend these seminars for free for at least for the time being. But there's also, if you want to have access to the recordings and to the presentations, you can become a member. The information is on the slide. There's over 250 recordings like this one that you can watch and download. And also there are sponsorship opportunities which allow you to connect and present to the members of the forum. I think that's it. Let's see. I think that's it. Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Leon. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, everybody. And take care and see you around.